It's race week again. Welcome everyone to F1 Nation ahead of this weekend's Australian Grand Prix with me, Tom Clarkson, and there's lots to talk about after a busy start to the season. And to help me do just that, I'm joined by Sky F1 presenter Natalie Pinkham and French journalist Fred Ferre from L'Équipe. A very warm welcome to you both. Should we start in Paris, perhaps? Fred, how are things?
Very good, thank you, Tom. Bonjour.
Bonjour. And Pinkle, all good?
From Paris to Brentford, and it's bonjour from me too.
We haven't had either of you on F1 Nation since the season's been up and running. So what did you make of the opening two races?
Well, I mean, I think there's been a bit of criticism that they weren't the most enthralling races. But for me, the subplots brought the drama. Ollie Bearman, the debut in Saudi. I mean, I've just got this enduring image of him eating a banana in the garage, looking completely unflappable. I certainly wasn't that chilled out and confident aged 18. He was just phenomenal, wasn't he? You know, to step in at such short notice and to weave like the eye of a needle, threading the eye of a needle, that Ferrari through the streets of Jeddah was just so impressive. But that's my big takeaway of the first two races is Ollie Bearman's debut. I mean, just such an exciting prospect.
The 1 hour before the start of the race, he was smiling at all of us watching him taking his helmet on and things like that. He was so impressive. And I think we're going to talk about him for the next 10 years.
Fred, have you been surprised by the gap that Red Bull has managed to maintain over the winter?
I have to admit, yes. Even if I have a lot of confidence in the French boss of the technology of Red Bull, which is Pierre Vacher, I thought that he may have made some mistake doing this very different car from the RB19, but they did it way better than the RB19. So the RB20 is massive.
You see, I'm hearing that actually the architecture of the car isn't that different. In layman's terms, it kind of looks it, because it certainly does look like a marked shift, doesn't it? But in fact, it is more of an evolution. I'm not surprised. I am pleasantly, reassured that they're just doing what they've always done and they won't stop. They won't sit back and relax and ever take it for granted.
They have been incredibly impressive. And for that reason, when you start thinking about the pecking order for this year, perhaps the likes of Toto Wolff were hoping that they would be destabilized. They haven't been. And it's very hard at this stage to see anyone beating Red Bull in the foreseeable future. One thing that I think is going to take all of our attention in the coming weeks and months is the 2025 driver market. And I think that's been accelerated by the presence of Ollie Bearman, 18-year-old Ollie Bearman, who stepped in for Carlos Sainz, of course, in Saudi Arabia, finished seventh. And while Carlos is expected to be back for Melbourne this weekend, after having his appendix removed on the Saturday of Saudi, it does raise the question, when are we going to see Bearman in Formula One again? Okay, he's got some FP1 running. I think he's got 6 FP1 sessions coming up with Haas during the year. But what about a full-time race seat? Guys, what do we think? There's 13 seats available in 2025. Where is Bearman? Let's throw the dice, first of all, and talk about Bearman. Is he going to be on the grid permanently next year?
Of course.
You've just casually thrown in there that Carlos Sainz is going to come back and drive in Australia a week after major surgery. Can we just take a moment to say fair play to that?
Yeah, true.
Walking gingerly into the paddock, he's going, all right, Bearman, don't you get too comfortable. That's very impressive. I mean, these guys are superhuman, aren't they? But yes, I'm with Fred. I mean, there's got to be a place for him on the grid. I guess the obvious one would be at Haas, because I believe he's very popular there anyway. And if they are the sort of sister team, if you like, to Ferrari to that extent, that would be using their partnership, if you like, in the most effective way.
I agree with Natalie. Haas was pleased with him with the FP1 he did last year. And since his impressive demonstration of that weekend, being able to step on the Formula One, which is a Ferrari, and capable of driving, and even if he was not able to qualify in Q3, only 11, okay, his mistake, but then being able to finish seventh and taking care of Lando Norris and Lewis Hamilton, which from the Brits are very known to be quite a good drivers, I would say that his work was perfect for a rookie.
Fred, you know Fred Vasseur, the team principal of Ferrari, very well. He has given so much opportunity to young drivers over the years, be it in the junior formulas or now in Formula One. Do you think there's a little bit of Fred that's going, perhaps I underestimated Behrmann. Maybe I should have thought more seriously about him for 2025 in a Ferrari?
Not a second. It's not being rude to Oli Behrmann, not at all. When you have Lewis Hamilton, you don't think about anything else. So if you have Charles Leclerc and Lewis Hamilton, it's not being mistaken by forgetting Oli Behrmann. Oli Behrmann was always on the plan. And since the first problem of Carlos, Fred was aware that he may have to take Oli on that weekend in Saudi. He spoke to René Rösing since Friday morning. So it was not a way of... But I think it's the best for a young driver not to be put in so much light, I would say. Okay, we had that with Lewis Hamilton in 2007, but it was the old days, and we have to forget about the old days that Lewis Hamilton or even Max Verstappen used to drive for a Toro Rosso during 1 year. You have to learn things. So for Behrmann, the best thing is to go on a small team like us and then take care of the knowing things and learning things.
So Pinks, if he does end up at Haas, could you see Behrmann replacing Hülkenberg or Magnussen?
So mean. My opinion doesn't count. I mean, I'm not just shirking. Well, I am just shirking the question. They're both great drivers. They're both experienced. I suppose, look, based on current form on the first couple of races, it's Hülkenberg who's in the points. But that was, of course, an almighty team effort thanks to Kevin Magnussen. So they're both proven entities, I suppose, within the sport. And yet, because of that, this would be the place to blood him because it would be great to get a young driver in there of his calibre. And I feel like Kevin had a sort of second coming with the sport. I think he wouldn't feel as if he hadn't given it his all. You know, I'm not saying he's done in the sport because he's still young, especially compared to some of the others, but he's had a second crack, which he wasn't expecting. And I feel like he's very philosophical as well. You know, now he's a dad, he's knows that there's a world and a life outside of F1. So naturally, I guess you would say it would be Kevin. You know, some people are talking about it as early as this year, whether they would make space for him. I suppose that is the ruthless nature of Formula One. But, you know, we're two races in, for goodness sake. Let's just let everybody just bed in and settle down and prove what they can do.
Let's move it on to Red Bull then and talk about 2025. Okay, Max Verstappen, in theory, has a contract until the end of 2028. He was quite vocal in Saudi Arabia about his allegiance to Helmut Marko and his future at Red Bull, I think, is going to be linked to what happens to Helmut Marko. But for the sake of this conversation, let's say Max is nailed on at Red Bull for a few more years. Who's it going to be in the second seat? Is Perez doing enough?
Perez is doing everything that's being asked of him. He's bringing it home cleanly in second. So you can't really fault him. I mean, what else is he supposed to do? I think that it feels like there has been a shift. Again, probably too soon to tell, but it feels like there's been a shift in his mindset as to how he approaches this season. I mean, if you remember back to last year, it was all out, I'm going for the championship. And of course, getting that win in Saudi last year really gave him the shot in the arm that he needed, that this was possible. You know, we know he's a street circuit specialist and suddenly you think, hang on, game on here. Only to be put well and truly back in his box by Max. So if he comes back into it this year, with a sort of different mentality, he may well start driving better. He might just relax.
Taking the pressure off, yeah.
Taking the pressure off, because I think that's often been... I mean, look, he's tenacious, we know that, but I think sometimes he does make mistakes when the pressure's on. So right now, he is absolutely doing enough. But again, long season. We've still got 22 races to go.
I have to say that you have to put Max in the equation. He may have to leave at one point. If he leaves Red Bull, then the things are very different. And then I would say that Checo's seat is kind of saved because you need someone to have the legacy of the driving from the old cars. So this is something that you must add on your mind for 25 and the years later.
I would be absolutely amazed if Max left for 25. I can see potentially 26 with the engine change and, you know, perhaps he knows something that we don't in terms of how far advanced Red Bull are in the development in that area. But I would be, I mean, it would be staggering to walk away from this rocket ship of a car in 25.
Nathalie, did you bet in Christmas that Lewis would go to Ferrari in 25?
But we're talking about walking away from an like, entirely dominant car. We're not talking about walking away from a Mercedes. We're talking about walking away from a Red Bull. So say he's got this year sewn up. So that's his fourth. He's going to walk away from a potential fifth?
There's so much momentum, isn't there, at Red Bull now. You do feel that if that there is a championship going begging for him in 25 if he stays. But and let's not forget that Lewis Hamilton was being lured by Ferrari, I think, twice during his dominating years at Mercedes. And he said no both times, because why would I want to leave? Because I'm winning everything in a Mercedes. It's only now that he's going because he's not winning anything and he wants to reinvigorate his career. But yeah, it would be an extraordinary turn of events.
Be ridiculous too.
Okay, so Pinks thinks he won't. Fred, do you think Max Verstappen will be in the Red Bull in 2025?
I'm not that sure. Maybe Max, because of Jos, because of Helmut, because of everything, will have to leave. I would say that it's a possibility.
What an extraordinary thought. And there's one driver who's licking his lips at the prospect of Max Verstappen leaving Red Bull for 25, and that is Fernando Alonso. Do we all agree? Fernando is sitting pretty. He's got those two world championships. He's got the speed still. He's got the desire. We've seen that. You know, where's he going to end up? Is he going to end up in a Mercedes replacing Lewis Hamilton? Is he going to end up in a Red Bull? Do you know what? Even if Max stays, I can still see Fernando knocking on the door at Milton Keynes saying, come on, give me a crack. They almost did a deal about 10 years ago and it didn't happen for various reasons. So I could see him ending up in a Red Bull, irrespective of which driver stays. I did want to ask about Daniel Ricciardo. I would say it's going not quite according to plan at the moment. He's been outqualified by Yuki Tsunoda in both of the races so far. And Yuki, I don't believe, is under serious consideration for the senior team next year. So where does it leave Daniel?
Retirement.
Fred, do you believe that?
If he's still on this way of driving like he did the last two races, I would say yes, because we thought that the new Toro Rosso, AlphaTauri, Racing Bulls, I don't know. I think that it should have been the car to be beaten because it's the copy of the RB19 or so. But the other made a huge progress, so it's still the RB19, but in the middle of the grid. And Yuki is performing better for the first races. So now we're coming to Australia, we're coming to Suzuka. If Daniel is not performing better, it's going to be tough for him.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because Daniel reported some pretty tough challenges with the car in Saudi. And yet Helmut Marko was public in his pressure on Daniel. So yet again, so either there's a problem with the car, then presumably Helmut Marko knows about it, but has chosen to speak out publicly about Daniel. I think it's a sort of a blessing and a curse going into your home race, because with that comes a huge amount of pressure, a huge amount of demands on your time, particularly for someone like Daniel, who's sort of so well-loved and wheeled out as the PR machine that he is. But that, in turn, takes away some of his focus from what's happening on track. Suzuka will be an interesting one for him. But look, he has the experience to bounce back from this. And hopefully the team have got on top of whatever those challenges are with the car in Jeddah. But, you know, time will tell.
And what about Carlos Sainz? He's, you know, done a great job in Bahrain to finish third. Of course, he didn't race in Saudi. He surely is going to be on the phone to his old chums at Red Bull saying, how about me?
Maybe or maybe not, because he knows that if he comes back, he may have to meet once again Max Verstappen. You know what? How it ended in 15. Okay, they were young guns. The fathers were too powerful. I agree. And now they are grown-ups and they can deal with everything. But I'm pretty sure that Carlos is clever enough to know that it's impossible to beat Max on his team.
Because there was very little separating them, Fred, in qualifying when they were teammates at Toro Rosso. I think it was like over the course of the year, it was a tenth of a second or something. So he's got the speed, he's got the experience now, a couple of Grand Prix wins as well. But you think it's the fact that Red Bull Racing is built around Max that will put him off?
No, I think the car is not that easy to drive. And Nathalie just pointed that the Toro Rosso this year is quite picky and difficult to drive, just like Checo said about the RB19 last year. But Max is an extraterrestrial. He can drive everything. He won't ever notice that things change. He drives everything and he put it at the maximum and maybe over the limit. But for a normal driver, and I think Carlos knows that he may be a very good driver, he's not a superhuman, just like can be Lewis or Fernando. So he knows that if he comes on that car, he may be able to win races, but he won't be able to compete against Max. It's better to go on another thing.
Fred, so who are your predictions for Red Bull's driver lineup in 25? Give me two names.
I would bet on Liam Lawson and Checo Perez.
Ooh.
Wow, Fred, hold the front page. Pinks, how about you?
The thing is, it is all about the dynamic, isn't it? I mean, I think Fred makes some brilliant points there because I can see that, you know, you have to be strategic with this if you are second to Max. You know, frankly, that's what you will be if you join the team and he's still there. You've got to be strategic in terms of your career because, you know, we've seen so many fall by the wayside who partnered him. And you shouldn't be lured by the attraction of going to what is clearly the quickest car at the moment if you're going to get crushed by Max Verstappen. I believe Max will be there. But, you know, stranger things have happened. And if he is still there, then I could see them putting in a young, inexperienced driver alongside him. I mean, look, TC, you know I'd love Daniel to be back in the Red Bull. And I actually think he's at a stage in his career where he can absolutely handle it. Ironically, I think Daniel Ricciardo could put a better performance in at Red Bull than he even is now at RB, because I think he knows that car and it suits him. And, you know, he's proven himself in there. I think these years out in the wilderness have been strange for him. But, you know, form is temporary, talent is permanent and all that. Why wouldn't you want to close out your career at the best team? And he's made no secret of that. That's what he wants to do. And I'm sure there's people that would want him. But again, you know, it's not a given. As we've seen the first two races, you've got to earn it and prove it. But I do think he would be a good fit for Max because I just think he's mature, experienced. He wouldn't be fazed by Max in the same way. And he'd be very much prepared to play the team game.
Can I ask you something? When Daniel moved from Red Bull to Renault, it took him some time to deliver. When he moved to Renault, from Renault to McLaren, he never delivered, even if he won. And then when he moved from McLaren to Toro Rosso, AlphaTauri, Visa, Cash App, he's not as impressive as he was. I think he's getting old and he's not being able to come back on every car he has to drive.
Listen, I think looking at the race results, you're right. But I think there are so many caveats. I think it's littered with caveats. I think that McLaren was a very difficult car to drive. Carlos Sainz said it himself. Lando has only ever known that McLaren. He's grown with the team. He's very smart staying with McLaren. He did perform at Renault. He outperformed the car, arguably. And then he broke his hand at Zandvoort. I mean, that was a horrible setback for him. And actually, it looked as if he was going to be able to do something in that car towards the latter half of the season. But look, obviously, I'm a big fan of his. I want a big supporter of his. But I recognise, you know, I'm not stupid. I recognise that you've got to put the work in, get the results. And it's a results-driven game. But I still believe he can do that.
I hope so, because I love him too.
Well, I'm going to be boring and say I think the Red Bull lineup will be unchanged for 2025. I think Max will stay. I think the competitive juices will get to him. And he'll just say, I'm not going to give up what could be a fifth world championship. So he will stay. And I think Checo is come into this season with a new mindset and is getting the job done.
Tom, if Max leaves, it's going to be Fernando 100% with Checo or Lawson.
You mentioned Lando Norris. Do we think he's going to regret having re-signed for McLaren as early as he has with the 13 seats up for grabs, you know, one at Mercedes and one at Red Bull? Do you think he jumped too soon?
I don't think so. I think it's a really smart move because I think McLaren are going in the right direction and they're continuing to do so. I mean, you play down their chances before the start of the season. And I think they've been, I mean, I know that they're lacking pace in a straight line. I know that he was frustrated in Saudi. So obviously the Jeddah circuit highlighted their weaknesses. But I just think there's something so important about being loyal to a team and sticking with the team and molding that team around you. I think Lando's being clever in that respect. I'd love to see him in the Red Bull. That would be great. Great to see him perform alongside Max. But everything's a risk, isn't it? As Fred's just flagged up with Daniel's career, you know, you make the wrong move at the wrong time in your career and it can change everything. It's not to say that it's terminal in the case of your career and how you're remembered, but I think it's smart.
Do you think the dynamic within McLaren is going to change this year with Oscar Piastri, year two, got his feet under the table? I thought he was incredibly impressive in Saudi. You know, you say being loyal to a team, which Lando clearly has, and molding the team around you. I just wonder whether Oscar's thinking exactly the same thing.
That's the best for McLaren, having two great drivers pushing each other. That's the best when you want to grow and become one of the first three top teams. So you have to deal with two wolves.
And Andrea Stella, the team principal at McLaren, is a guy who I think will deal with two wolves, as you say, Fred. Well, I think he gets the sport. He, you know, he's worked with Michael Schumacher in the past and Fernando Alonso, and I think he'll keep a lid on the politics inside McLaren.
I totally agree about Oscar. I mean, last year he was brilliant as a rookie, but there were just a few mistakes and he was just laser focused on ironing them out. And I feel like this year he's shoulders are back. He feels like he's grown a couple of inches. He's confident in a way he wasn't before. I don't know whether that's just innate in him or just great mentorship from Mark Webber. He just seems quietly more confident now than he ever has.
Well, his Achilles heel last year was race management and particularly managing the tyres. And we've had two races this year so far, and there's a marked shift in the right direction in terms of his race management. So he is making ground where he needs to make ground. So it'll be fascinating to watch the intra-team dynamic at McLaren, particularly if they're able to outdevelop some of their rivals as we get into the meat of the season. But guys, what about Mercedes? We know that George Russell is going to be there next year. He signed that two-year deal midway through last year. Who is going to be alongside him in 25? Toto Wolff talks endlessly about Andrea Kimi Antonelli, who is racing in Formula 2 alongside Ollie Bearman this year in the Prema team. Is he going to be ready to step up alongside George Russell at Mercedes in 25? Toto's talked about Max Verstappen and how much he'd love to have him there. Alonso has no doubt been on the telephone as well. Ocon has a contract, a management contract with Mercedes. Carlos Sainz has probably no doubt been on the telephone as well. He's looking for a drive. Where's your money?
I think that much depends on how Russell performs this year, because I think if Russell grows into the natural team leader, then they will be happy to bring on a young, inexperienced driver under him, like Antonelli. I think if Russell falters, as we saw in Singapore, and little mistakes creep in, which I don't think they will, but if they do, then I think they will be more inclined to go for, well, you know, Fernando, potentially. I mean, I'd love to see Max there, but no. I've already said Max is staying at Red Bull. Our listeners won't be able to see this, but Fred has just got the most gorgeous wry smile on his face through all of this. I sense, Fred, that you really just enjoy, almost like a fantasy league with your football players, just moving them around from team to team and getting the best combo, don't you?
Yeah, I love that. And I would say that whatever it happens for next year, I wouldn't bet on Antonelli to Mercedes for 25. Just like I said before, it's better for Berman, it's better to make a young gun learns away from the pressure. Even if Kimi Antonelli is said to be the next messiah. But remember, we only have one Lewis Hamilton or one Max Verstappen or one Fernando Alonso every 10 or 15 years. So don't put pressure on these guys for that. And even Max learned in a small team. I would bet on one last year for Fernando Alonso or 1 year for Esteban and see what happens.
Go on. So give me two names at Mercedes. Well, we know one of them. Who is going to be George Russell's teammate next year, Fred?
Ocon or Alonso. Because he is part of the managing of Mercedes, so he can accept to sign only 1 year. And then in 26, you can put Antonelli back in Mercedes, and he has learned in Williams or whatever.
Luca de Meo at Alpine will no doubt be hoping that Esteban Ocon stays at his team next year. Do you think both Ocon and Gasly are looking for a way out, given the way the year has started for them?
2 months ago, I would have said no. We all know that next year's car will be the same as this year's car, so you can already know who's going to finish first and who's going to finish last. And especially with all these people leaving Alpine, which is a nightmare for me as a French, you can't see the team being able to be back on the track at a nice position before 26 at most. It will take years to come back.
With your L'Equipe hat on, how are you reporting the Alpine story this year? How much loyalty is there in the French media towards the national team?
We are not loyal. We are just journalists. So at one point, we decided that it's not worth going on report every weekend to say that they are lost. If they are not getting better, okay, we did a small story about Esteban because the driver of Esteban last week in Jeddah was great. Okay, he was only 13, but he has the worst car on the grid and he managed to be 13. Okay, it's not good, but for that kind of experimentation, it's great for him. He did a very nice drive, but we can't say more about that. And then we're going to have to cope with that unless there is big rain in Melbourne or a big crash in Suzuka and Pierre or Esteban take the chance to the opportunity to make a result.
I could see Alpine in 25 being a great opportunity for some young drivers. Jack Doohan, for example, their reserve driver this year, I think there's surely a great opportunity.
I would bet more on Victor Martins if he performs on the F2.
Maybe Jack and Victor, or is it either or?
It would be stupid to get rid of all the two drivers. For my two French drivers, it's going to be a nightmare because they can't show their skill this year. To find the opportunity to get away, it's going to be difficult for the two of them because we all know that they are very good drivers. They won Grand Prix, one each. They made podiums, so they're good. They're even very good. But they won't be able to show their skills this year. So you need to take one at least, and maybe do two, but to have the experience at the team, which has to be rebuilt.
Yeah, I mean, Fred's spot on there, because how can your stock rise if you can't prove your worth in a car? And there was a time when we talk about Ocon of being the star of the future. You know, he was so highly thought of by Toto Wolff, for example. And then he just has, he obviously had that sabbatical and it feels as if he's just like disappeared off people's radars. He still puts a smile on in the pen every time we speak to him. But it must be incredibly hard. And Gasly as well, you know, his stock was incredibly high at one point when at AlphaTauri and we thought he's going on to great things. And it must be immensely frustrating. I do have to take issue with you though, Fred. Some journalists are loyal. You do have a heart. Just look for it. Search for it. It's in there somewhere.
You raise the topic of Toto Wolff and Esteban Ocon, and Toto is so ruthless. And if he thought Esteban Ocon was, you know, the next great driver in Formula One, there's no doubt in my mind that he would have put him alongside Lewis Hamilton. So the fact that Ocon didn't get the drive at Mercedes, I don't think is a, it's not a vote of confidence from Toto. And I just wonder where it'll leave him going forward.
It was hard for Ocon when he was up against George. I mean, it feels like a century ago now, but remember Spa in the Williams? And it was just a matter of time before he was promoted to the Mercedes seat.
I agree with Nathalie. And remember that the one who was doing all the job in the 19 simulator of Mercedes was Esteban. The day that Lewis was sick, it was in Germany, 19. And Esteban flew at 2 o'clock in the morning to be ready to get the Lewis seat. And it's because Lewis said, okay, I will deal with that and I'm going to qualify. And he was very sick, but they all believed in Esteban. And there is only two seats. So Toto had to deal with George Russell and Esteban Ocon. He chose George, but it was not, I would say, a vote against Esteban. It was a vote for George.
Okay, that's a fair point. And let's talk about a Mercedes power unit now that's in the back of the Aston Martin. Does that mean Aston is a potential home for Ocon, given his links with Mercedes?
I would more bet on Carlos to go there. If Fernando goes to Red Bull.
Aston Martin have grown so much in the last 18 months. And actually later this year, their wind tunnel is coming on stream, isn't it? So they are now a big team, ready to get podiums and wins. And, you know, we talk about, oh, Fernando's going to go to Mercedes. Oh, Fernando's going to go to Red Bull. But hang on a minute. Would he actually be better off staying at Aston Martin, given the trajectory of that team?
I mean, he'll be the one that knows the most. He's on the inside. He'll know if they are going in the right direction for him. I mean, to leave Aston for Mercedes, I would say would be a gamble for Fernando. He's not guaranteed to do better at Mercedes than to stick around at Aston. And he hasn't always made the best decisions with his moves, has he, throughout his F1 career?
That is true. So you think for Alonso, it's Red Bull or Aston?
I think so.
Or Mercedes.
Well, but as Pink says, Fred, it's more of a risk. Are Mercedes really going to be more competitive than Aston Martin next year?
Of course, they have the same engine. If you move, you will always take the team that has the engine. They're building the engine. At Mercedes, the problem is not the engine. I think at the end, they will cope with the chassis. At the end, I hope so.
So, Fred, if you were Fernando Alonso and the opportunity was there to join George Russell at Mercedes, you would sign that contract rather than stay at Aston Martin.
My name is Fernando Alonso. I moved 6 times in 20 years, so I can move a 7th time.
And I'm going to drive till I'm 50 anyway, so...
Yes, I've got loads of time. Loads of time. Now, look, last team I wanted to discuss with you guys was Williams. Now, Alex Albon has a contract until the end of 2025. But he did say on this week's Beyond the Grid, actually, Beyond the Grid podcast, that he's very excited about the potential opportunities for 25, suggesting that he is actually looking elsewhere. I mean, we've discussed the teams where someone like Alex Albon would want to go. Could he return to Red Bull? Could he jump to Mercedes? Could he even go to Aston Martin? Or does he stay at Williams and remain integral to James Vowles' project?
So are we going crazy? Remember that in Red Bull, the big boss is Thai, and Alex Albon is driving for Thailand. So it wouldn't be stupid to have a Thai driver alongside Max Verstappen or whoever will be driving in 25.
Yeah, he has personal sponsorship from the Thai owner of Red Bull still to this day. That's an interesting dilemma for him, isn't it? But what about Williams? Do we feel Williams are still quite far away? It's very tight in the midfield this year, isn't it? You know, a couple of tenths here or there are the difference between a really solid Q3 and being knocked out of Q1, quite frankly. I suppose if you're Alex, you have to look forward. And if a Red Bull opportunity came up, even an Aston Martin or a Mercedes, I think you'd have to look at it, wouldn't you?
But you also have to be patient. You know that Williams is rebuilding itself since Jim's arrival. The speech of James Rolls is saying that because they have to rebuild everything, it's an old and historical team, but you need to rethink about everything. And he already said last year that maybe this year they would go back because they needed to work on everything, just like the steering wheel, which had problems at the first two Grand Prix. Okay, they had problems with the pit stop. Okay, but they relearned everything. I think at the end of the year, they will be a much more competitive team than they were, let's say, 5 years ago when it was about Felipe Massa and Valtteri Bottas. I think in 2 years, James Souls would have made the job. And okay, if you have to go to Red Bull for Alex Albon, he has to go. But if not, he should stay because he's the core of the project.
It's interesting because I don't really associate the word patience with F1 drivers. it's funny though, isn't it? Because you're right, James Vowles has certainly marked out a very long-term project here. Alex, I feel like he's going to be chomping at the bit to get into more competitive machinery sooner than Williams' trajectory will allow. But I think it's going to take too long. For the sake of his career, he needs to be selfish about that because it is a short shelf life to be a driver.
You have to be loyal, Natalie.
and he's turning 28 at the end of this month. He's got 80-odd Grand Prix under his belt. I would say he's hitting the peak of his powers now. So if he's going to make the jump to a Red Bull. But what's really interesting is that what we've kind of concluded, I think, when we're looking at our 25 grid, is that for most drivers, you'd say yes to Red Bull. Otherwise, stick where you are and build what you already have. Whether you're an Alonso at Aston Martin, an Alex Albon at Williams, or if Lando Norris is obviously signed up at McLaren, but he doesn't want to move either.
Agreed.
One quick thing before we move on is there's Haas, there's Sauber, there's RB. All of those drives are up for grabs. We haven't discussed, in the context of Carlos Sainz, Sauber. You know, it's just been announced just last week that Audi are going to purchase all of the shares from Finn Rousing, and they're going to do it sooner rather than later so they can start properly building the Audi project in Hinville. How tasty is that for a Carlos Sainz? Or again, is it the Williams problem in that it's not going to happen fast enough?
I would say first, it's going to happen fast enough. Carlos is more mature than Alex Albon. He already won races, so he needs a car that where he can deliver at once. I think Audi is going to take time. And especially if Audi wants a German driver and a young driver. So Carlos is Spanish and he's not young enough to be fitted in that seat. So I wouldn't bet on him for the Sauber project.
You make a compelling argument, Monsieur Ferré.
We have asked our listeners to send in any questions that they have. The email address, if you want to do so, is f1nation@f1.com. And Eva got in touch after our Saudi Arabian Grand Prix review. She says, when selecting a driver of the day, the panelists often gloss over Max Verstappen. And I wonder why that is. When was the last time he put a wheel wrong in any situation? He's winning every race with a big gap, despite his teammates showing the field is close. So it isn't just the car that puts Verstappen so far ahead. Do you think the pundits take the extraordinary skills of Verstappen for granted and as such don't appreciate the level of perfection that we're seeing him deliver? What do we think? Do we take Max for granted?
No, not at all. I write every week and only keep. He's the best driver on the grid and he's doing a perfect job. And then I move on because I need something to write for my readers. But he's the best. He made, I think, five or six times the best lap during the whole Grand Prix. Then he was skipped away by Charles at the end. But he was always, I think, 5/10 faster than Checo. During the whole race without any pressure for him, just for fun and with no mistake.
Our French correspondent does not take Max Verstappen for granted. Pinks?
None of us do. I think what we do, though, is we look, as we discussed earlier, for other subplots, for other storylines, to give others the credit and kudos that they deserve. It's a given that Max, by winning the race, has done so with incredible talent and guile. So I think if there was a championship point for driver of the day, then we might feel more compelled to give it to Max. But because there's not, and it's just a nice little talking point between us and a nice little honour to bestow on someone other than Max. That's why we do it.
I agree with you completely. And Eva, I hope that answers your question. And please do get in touch, everybody. F1Nation@F1.com. All right, my friends, it is now time to test your knowledge of the Australian Grand Prix in Quiz the Nation. And we've got four rounds: qualifying, sprint, race, and the podium. And if the scores are even after those, then we do have a tiebreaker in place so we can crown a champion. Are you ready to go?
Ready for the race.
We are ready.
Well, let's get started with the qualifying round. You'll each face one quickfire question worth 1 point. Question one, Fred. Who has the most pole positions at the Australian Grand Prix?
Michael Schumacher.
That is not a good start, Fred Ferry. It is Lewis Hamilton with 8. Natalie, coming to you. How many red flags were there at the 2023 Australian Grand Prix?
I've got the answer.
I know that there were 8 DNFs. How many red flags? Were there 3?
Correct, Pinks. There were 3. So it is 1-0 to Natalie. Now it's time for the sprint round, and this game is sudden death. I want you to name the 22 drivers who have won the Australian Grand Prix since its debut in Adelaide in 1985. Each of you will take it in turns to name a driver, and if you give an incorrect answer, repeat one that's already been given, or you just fail to provide one, then you're out of the round. And the last person standing wins a point. So, Natalie, we will start with you. Let's name the 22 drivers who have won the Australian Grand Prix.
Schumacher.
Correct.
Hamilton.
Correct.
Okay. Well, I remember Rosberg winning it.
Correct. Fred.
Häkkinen.
Correct.
Stop being so quick. Stressing me out. Kimi?
Correct. Fred?
Coulthard.
Correct.
Very good. Oh my God, Damon. Damon.
1996. Very good. And 95, I think. Yeah. Fred?
Alonso.
Correct. Oh, right. I would say the easy pickings have been taken. It's now getting harder. Natalie?
Senna. Surely Senna's won it.
Correct. Fred.
Fisichella.
Very good. That's a good one. Nats, back to you.
Oh my God, he's going to kill me that I didn't say this sooner. Jensen.
Correct. 2009. Fred.
Prost.
Correct.
God, Fred.
Fred's looking at the ceiling. Natalie's looking at the floor. Come on, Pinkle.
Max must have won it. Have we said Max?
He won it last year. Well done. Correct. Fred, back to you.
Bottas.
Correct. Yes.
Oh my God. You're so quick at this. Wait, hang on. Are there any more from this current grid, TC?
Yes. You've got 8 to get.
How many more from the current grid?
1.
Oh, God.
Come on, there's some big names there.
Have we said Vettel?
Correct. Fred, back at you.
I'm going to try Nigel Mansell.
Correct. Back at you, Pinks.
One more from the grid.
It's like a penalty shootout. Come on, Pinks.
We said Fernando.
We have said Fernando, yes.
She lost.
Fred, we're going to continue. I don't think that was her final answer, so...
It was my final answer. That's my fault. I think Fred deserves this one.
Okay, Pinks is out. Fred, you need to give me another correct answer to get this point. You need to give me another correct answer. Where are you going?
Nelson Piquet.
Correct! Fred, you have the point. It's 1-1. This is a seriously competitive quiz. People at home who are saying, who else? 2 years ago, Charles Leclerc
Of course. Oh, my God.
Eddie Irvine, back in 1999. Gerhard Berger has won it. Thierry Boutsen has won it. And Keke Rosberg has won it. Right, let's move on to the race. And this is where we're going to introduce some audio. So this round is what happened next. You're each going to hear some commentary from previous Australian Grand Prix, and I want you to tell me what happened next to win a point. Fred, we'll start with you. What happened next at the 2014 race in Melbourne?
Roars of appreciation for Rosberg. They are going to be drowned out, though, by this young man from Perth. It's Daniel Ricciardo for Australia, for Red Bull, comes home to take second place.
It's an easy one. He lost the podium because there is some fuel problem and he was disqualified 2 hours after the end of the race.
Correct. There was an issue. He exceeded the maximum permitted fuel flow rate. But gosh, we remember that one, don't we? The crowd went completely wild, didn't they? Well, look, Nats, what happened next at the 2018 Australian Grand Prix?
Kevin Magnussen has pitted, has come back out in 11th place, just behind Valtteri Bottas.
Was this his debut with Haas and he got in the point? He did really well. He got like fifth or something. Was that 2019?
Give me a bit more. 2018 Australian Grand Prix.
Oh, was he promoted into the points? No?
No. Here's the answer.
Who's that going very, very slowly? That was Kevin Magnussen. And by the looks of it, Martin, would you think one of those wheels isn't attached properly?
Hang on, we've got another problem.
Another one, surely not. Roman Grosjean's pulled over to the side of the track. What is happening down at Haas this afternoon?
Fred, this isn't for a point, but just tell me in Nats what you think happened.
That the two Haas didn't have the wheel rim properly fitted and they both get the, not disqualified, but they had to...
They had to retire. You're absolutely right. Kevin Magnussen and Romain Grosjean were running fourth and fifth, respectively, on course for Haas's best ever finish. But they each had to retire on the lap following their pit stops, having both been released with a loose wheel. Scores on the doors. Fred has two. Natalie has one. She won't be enjoying this, Fred. So let's move on now to the podium, the final round of this week's Quiz the Nation. Your task is to reveal which mystery Formula One guest I am. I'll give you three clues in total, one at a time. If you guess correctly after the first clue, you'll win 3 points. After the second clue, you'll receive 2 points. And after the final clue, just a single point. And once you think you know the answer, shout it out. So for 3 points, clue number one. I can speak Japanese.
Takuma Sato.
Jensen Button.
Clue number two. With no tumble dryer in my flat, I once used the oven to dry my clothes.
Sounds like Yuki.
Nigel Mansell.
For clarity, this person didn't actually put his clothes in the oven. He just turned it on, opened the door and placed the aerator in front of it. Clue number three. This is just for 1 point. I am the first driver to win the three championships directly below Formula One consecutively.
Oscar Piastri.
She's done it, which means, Fred, it is 2-2 and we're going to go to the tiebreaker. So for this, you both need a bit of paper and a pen because you're going to have to write down a number. And I don't want you to be influenced by the other person. So I'm going to read out the question. You're going to write down your answer. The nearest to the answer will win the quiz. It's as simple as that. Here we go. How many pit stops were there in total at last year's Australian Grand Prix? Okay, write down your answer. Closest to the correct answer wins.
I'm going for it. It's a big one.
Fred, you're done?
Yeah.
Nats, you're done. Right, hold up your answers, please, to the screen. Natalie says 75 and Fred says 44, which means Fred is the winner. The answer was 53.
What did I want?
Just the honour.
a lot of honour and a pint from me in Melbourne. How about that?
That's perfect.
Honour, but also the fact you've crushed me. It is a Gallic victory over the Brits.
So, with Fred being the winner of our Quiz the Nation about the Australian Grand Prix, let's bring it on to this weekend's race. How do we see it panning out? Fred, let's start with our winner. What do you think?
I won't say Max Verstappen because it's too easy. So I would bet on Charles Leclerc and with something happening with red flags and things like that.
Yeah, back to Eva's point earlier. You're taking him for granted, Fred.
No, I think he's feeling guilty because he didn't remember that Charles had won the Australian Grand Prix.
Fred, why? Why do you think that?
Because I think Ferrari is not that far away from Red Bull. If it's Red Bull driven by Checo Perez, a normal driver. And then if something bad happened at Max, and it's quite a long time that he didn't have a DNF or something wrong going on his car, so I would bet on that, then I would say that Charles and Ferrari are the best to take the win.
And Pirelli are going one step softer with the tyre compounds this year. It's the C3, C4 and C5, the softest three. How do we think that'll shake things up? A few more pit stops maybe, but back to Red Bull, very kind on its tyres. I could see it helping Red Bull.
Yeah, but Ferrari had made a huge progress on that kind of thing and they quite know how to manage tyres now. So this is not a problem. And in my bet, something's wrong happening during the race. It's not a normal race. And maybe it's rain, maybe it's a huge crash, maybe it's Max DNF. So we are not related on tyre management and everything's going smoothly.
Pinkscore, what do you think is going to happen?
I think that, yeah, I mean, look, if last year's anything to go by, it'd be great, wouldn't it? If it was as drama-filled as it was this time last year.
Well, Pinks, let's throw it back to last year quickly, right? George Russell on the front row of the grid. He beats Max away at the start. Lewis Hamilton muscles past Max on lap one. It was a Mercedes 1-2 in the early stages last year until Leclerc threw it off halfway around the opening lap. But can Mercedes challenge? Do we think this track might suit them? They've always been pretty good at Albert Park.
I mean, it would be great. It would be great for Mercedes and the championship if they could. I'm not so sure. I think if we've learned anything about Red Bull this year is that when things get tougher, they step up another gear and they're able to deliver. I mean, I can't see past it being another Red Bull victory.
Red Bull 1-2?
I think Ferrari and Mercedes. Let's go Red Bull, Ferrari, Mercedes. You pick the drivers.
Okay. Fred, can we have a podium, 1-2-3 from you?
Charles Leclerc, Checo Perez, and Lewis Hamilton.
Oh, he's mixing it up.
Like it. One thing I think we learnt in Saudi was just how good the McLaren is through the fast corners. And since they changed the track in Albert Park a couple of years ago, it's now really fast. So I could see this playing to McLaren's strengths. Forget about last year with the McLaren. Early season, they were struggling massively. But I could see Lando and Oscar Piastri being competitive this weekend. I might even go for a Piastri podium. Piastri podium, Pinks. I'm going to go Max for the win, Charles Leclerc for second, and Oscar Piastri for third.
Wow. Can you imagine? Oh. The party.
And let's hope it doesn't become a quiz question next year when we have to reflect on it being taken away for a fuel flow problem or something. But Pinks, while Fred and I are going to be on the ground in Melbourne, tell us about your week, because you're going nocturnal, aren't you?
Yes. I'm quite excited, actually, because I won't be going to Australia, but I will still be working on the race back at base. So I will be going through the night. Let's see what happens.
Well, for people on the ground in Oz, qualifying starts at 4 p.m. in Melbourne and the race is at 3 p.m. So that's 4 a.m. in the UK. And check the official Formula One website or app to find your local timings for each session wherever you're watching in the world. Let's check in with our F1 fantasy team now, F1 Nation Racing. We've got more than 300,000 teams in the F1 Nation World Championship 2024. That is a huge number. And it means our already slim chances of becoming fantasy champions are even slimmer. We're currently ranked 21,576th in the pecking order. And congratulations to our leader, Danny74, who's on a whopping 622 points after the opening two races. We might not have that many points, but at least we've been consistent with 208 in Bahrain and 203 in Jeddah. I'm going to use up all three of our free transfers for the Australian Grand Prix. I'm backing my podium prediction and replacing Fernando Alonso with the home favourite Oscar Piastri. I'm also, rather boldly, taking out Red Bull as one of our constructors and bringing in McLaren. And Zhou Guan Yu has made way for Yuki Tsunoda. So that gives us a lineup of Verstappen, Piastri, Albon, Tsunoda and Magnussen, with McLaren and Williams as our constructors. And remember, F1 Fantasy is free to play. Just go to formula1.com/fantasy or search for Fantasy on the official F1 app. Create your team and join the F1 Nation World Championship 2024 to compete against us and other listeners. And don't forget, you have until the start of qualifying in Melbourne to make any changes to your team for the Australian Grand Prix. Good luck. Well, guys, thank you very much for your time. Thank you, Nats. Thank you, Fred. Thank you to everybody at home for listening. And remember, if you have a question like Eva's and you want to ask our F1 Nation experts, please get in touch using the email f1nation@f1.com. And little plug, please check out this week's F1 Beyond the Grid with the Aussie home favourite Oscar Piastri. That'll be available on your pod feeds from Wednesday, and you can also watch our full chat from his driver room in Jeddah, no less, on Formula One's YouTube channel. But we'll be back next Monday from the Albert Park paddock with our review of the Australian Grand Prix, so do join us then. F1 Nation is produced by Formula One and Audioboom Studios.